Welcome to the Digital Euro Podcast by the Digital Euro Association. In this podcast, you will learn about the disruption of technology in the monetary and financial system. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the episode.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Digital Euro Podcast by the Digital Euro Association, a European think tank focused on digital money. My name is Conrad Kraft, and I'm an executive director at the Digital Euro Association. And today we will be exploring the roles of commercial banks in a CBDC world and what effect CBDC implementation might have on the commercial banking sector. This is a topic of great interest for all governments across the globe, both those contemplating the implementation of CBDCs and those who have already implemented CBDCs. To help me unpack this important topic today, I'm joined by Dr. Cyrus de la Rubia from Hamburg Commercial Bank, who is a supporting member of the Digital Euro Association. Welcome, Cyrus, and thank you for your time today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Excellent. Let's give the listeners some insight into who you are, and could you perhaps introduce yourself and give some background information about Hamburg Commercial Bank, maybe what you do, where you're based, and that type of thing.
Yeah. So hi everybody. Yes, I'm chief economist at Hamburg Commercial Bank, which, as the name says, is based in Hamburg, Germany. And in this role as chief economist, I represent the view of our house on economic growth, interest rates, foreign exchange rates, and I do this externally through publications, presentations, and in different media outlets, but also internally. And well, the Hamburg Commercial Bank is a private bank, is a specialist finance institution with a focus on real estate, shipping, renewable energy, and infrastructure mainly.
Great. Thank you for that brief introduction, Cyrus. Perhaps just a little bit more information about yourself. With respect to your role at Hamburg Commercial Bank, how did you come to find yourself at this role? And how does your work relate to CBDCs, if at all?
Well, I started in 2005 at this bank, which then had another name, but it's still the same bank. And I started as an analyst and then moved on to head the economics department. And well, as a chief economist, you have to look at obviously a very many short-term issues, such as monetary policy decisions, for example, of the European Central Bank or the Federal Reserve Bank, and the implications of these decisions for financial markets. But you have also to look at long-term issues or more structural things. And the CBDC is certainly a more long-term thing to look at because it's not there yet, but we know that it will come and it will have some implications for financial markets and for banks, and therefore I'm in this subject.
That's very interesting to know and to learn of your journey up to this point. Could you maybe just give us some info about whether you have a CBDC unit at Hamburg Commercial Bank currently, or if that's not something that you're looking at right now?
Well, actually, currently we don't have a CBDC unit, but we might think about it once it becomes clearer when and in what form CBDC will be introduced, I would say, yeah.
Great. I think to preface and set the stage for a look at how CBDC implementation might impact commercial banks and their roles in the future, it's worth understanding what the current roles of some of the major actors in the implementation of a CBDC are. And those major actors are, of course, central banks, as well as commercial banks. So if I ask you, could you maybe take us through some of what some of the present roles of commercial banks and central banks are in the monetary system?
There are many different roads, and I start with central bank roads. If you look at the payment system, it's the role of the central bank to guarantee a smooth and safe payment flow between commercial banks, supporting thereby the general payment system. Then a central bank obviously has a macroeconomic role, which is to provide for stable money, thus to hold inflation, for example, at around 2%, which currently proves to be very difficult indeed. The main instrument to do this is to steer the money market rates to stimulate or dampen economic activity and thereby inflation, which is done by the key policy rates mainly. Then the central bank has also the task to look at financial stability issues. It is, I think, the most important motivation behind the idea that financial markets and especially banks have to be regulated. And in the case of the ECB, it is a regulator. In other countries and jurisdictions, there is a separate body to regulate. But regulation is very often another role of the central bank. Well, and in the context of financial stability, the central bank is also a crisis manager in the sense that it provides liquidity in times of crisis to avoid a lack of liquidity. So this is the so-called lender of last resort. And this proved to be very important for rescuing the banking sector in 2008 and also during the corona crisis, providing liquidity to the markets. And then there is another role which is rather open to debate, which is if the central bank should also enable the financing of the state. So if it should also engage in fiscal issues. And most central banks or most central bankers would say, no, we are not allowed to finance the state directly. Yet the development of the last years have shown that central banks have indeed financed fiscal spending by purchasing government bonds, which were obviously issued by the bank and were by the state, and where you have really financed government debt. So these are the main roles of the central banks I would emphasize here. Turning to commercial banks, well, the classical role of commercial banks is that they are intermediaries between those who want to save money and those who want to invest money. And that's, that means that on the one hand, you have especially the private households and corporates who have more money than they need. And on the other hand, you have other private households and other corporates who have a lack of money and ask for a loan. So these two parties are brought together by the commercial banks, which act as intermediaries. In addition to this basic role to provide finance for the economy, commercial banks play also a very crucial role in the payment system. So the payment system, not only the central bank acts here as a decisive actor, but also commercial banks. Each payment usually goes through the banking system. So for example, if I make a payment from my bank to someone at bank B of, let's say, 100 euro, my bank will deduce 100 euro from my account, while bank B will add 100 euro to the account of the payment recipient. And this is monitored by banks, but also by the central bank. So this payment system role, this is really at the heart of any economy. And therefore, banks are also seen as systemic relevant, some more than others, depending on the size and their size, their share in the payment system.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that. I think most people, of course, interface with commercial banks and are pretty not really familiar with the roles of commercial bank. I mean, with central the roles of central banks, and I think it was worth an exploration thereof. So, of course, one of our key objectives at the DIA is to educate all sectors of society, not only experts and the financial professionals, regarding the topics of digital money, CBDCs, and related topics. And in that vein, and to perhaps segue into the effects of, or potential effects of CBDC implementation on the commercial banking sector, Cyrus, if perhaps I could ask you to touch on, you know, what is a CBDC and how does this differ from current electronic money?
Well, the current electronic money is really money that you get that is issued or that, yeah, that is issued provided by banks. And this means that it is not central bank money, but it's rather a promise that if you want to exchange this bank's money to cash, then you can receive, then the bank will provide you with cash, and cash is is central bank money. So it's a promise to get central bank money, but in the form of cash and not central bank money itself, the bank's deposits. So that's mainly different. And if you have CBDC and you have really a CBDC account, then you would have directly central bank money.
I see. So essentially, CBDCs are the liability of central banks, similar to what cash, physical cash is.
Right.
And it lies in the intersection between electronic, except that it's an electronic form. It's never meant to be converted into physical cash. And it's also universally accessible. So I think, yeah, you know, we've all seen these money flowers to some extent. I think there's another flower with, CBDCs being in the intersection between liabilities of central bank, being electronic only, and being universally accessible to all. So with that premise, having been established, could you maybe now let's turn to CBDCs in particular. What are the various types of CBDCs that exist out there, or the forms of CBDC?
Well, you could differentiate between wholesale CBDC and retail CBDC. That would be the first differentiation, where the wholesale CBDC actually already exists, because if you take a bank, a commercial bank, they have already a CBDC account. They have a central bank reserves account, and they move this central bank money from one bank to the other bank. You can extend this wholesale a CBDC term also to companies, so that also you provide companies with a CBDC account. But the retail CBDC, which is the other form of CBDC, would mean that every individual gets a CBDC account, a central bank account, which obviously today is not the case, because you have only access to central bank money through cash, but not through a central bank account. So this changes quite a lot, because at the end of the day, it means that you don't really need a banking sector anymore for making a payment, because you could transfer your money from your central bank accounts to another individual's central bank account without having the need to get to go through a bank. So these are one way to differentiate CBDC. And then the other way to differentiate CBDC is to look at the architecture. So who is issuing, at the end of the day, yes, who is issuing it, and in what way these central bank accounts are managed. And you can have a very radical way, let's say, that would be quite disruptive, or could be quite disruptive for the financial markets. That would be that the central bank provides for any individual directly in a CBDC account, And this CBDC account is also managed by the central bank. So this would mean that even the onboarding and the KYC process is done by the central bank. And the private sector does not play any role in this model, which does not necessarily mean that we won't have any banks' money anymore or any deposits anymore. Banks could still offer deposits in private households, but and private households may have also an incentive to deposit money with their commercial bank and so on. But this sort of CBDC would be exclusively managed by the central bank. That would be one way to do it. But you could have also another way to implement CBDC with asking commercial banks to make the onboarding of the clients. So the commercial banks would manage the central bank accounts of their clients. In this scenario or in this implementation and architecture, the commercial banks would not have access to the central bank accounts. They could not use the money of the individuals to make business, but they would manage it only. It's like a deposit for stocks that you have for a client. You cannot use these stocks to make any business, but you have only to manage it. And that would be the second way. And the third way to have CBDC implemented is, well, it's kind of similar to the idea of a stable coin. So the bank issues a form of digital money, and this is covered 100% by wholesale CBDC, so by the bank's central bank reserves. So in a way, this wholesale CBDC is transformed into a retail CBDC. And the regulator should look at the banks if they do not issue more than is available as CBDC in their cover. That would be the third way. Yeah.
Excellent. So I think we kind of had a good spectrum there from what you explained, Cyrus, is that we've got the more radical approach, like you said, where the traditional financial sector is kind of excluded from a CBDC implementation, and certain roles that are traditionally facilitated by commercial banks would now accrue to the central bank. I don't think, and traditionally the whole concept of onboarding KYC and management of financial services is not one that is traditionally a central bank's role. Do you think, what's the likelihood do you of, in your opinion, of such an implementation taking place, considering its radical approach, just in your own opinion?
Mm. I don't think that many central banks are really keen to take over this role, because, as you said, it's not the traditional role of making this micromanagement of individual accounts. So it's much more easier and feasible to require banks to manage the onboarding process of individuals. So I would say this is more likely. I don't think that the direct way is a theoretical option, but I, as far as I understand what I've read about in CBDC articles from central bankers, they are not keen to do
it. Yeah,
that
would make sense. Of course, it would be too jarring on the financial sector and banking sector in particular to adopt this approach. Just on the topics of the three most common architectures, I think you mentioned the direct approach, the two-tier approach, which is having commercial banks, having CBDCs issued to commercial banks, and then commercial banks obviously managing that process to the general public on behalf of the central bank. And then I think there was a hybrid method that you mentioned. You know, I think recently from some comments emerging from the Project Hamilton CBDC trial, they did also note that CBDC design choices are more granular than commonly assumed. They indicated that they found that some of the the classical categorizations lack sufficient insufficiency to really articulate the complexity of choices in access and intermediation and institutional roles in CBDC design. They cited an example where they said that a wallet can both support an account-based view and a coin-specific view for the user, regardless of how funds are stored in a database. So I think, you know, the literature is still emerging, as it were, around these topics. So I think that's why it's worth, you know, just revisiting these concepts, such that we are able to understand that, you know, this is an emerging field, and as trials, you know, are implemented, and as CBDCs are implemented worldwide, that things change and classifications change, and so different formats are seen as suitable based on the jurisdiction, etc., etc. So thank you so much for for briefing us about those various forms. So, in your opinion, like, which sort of tasks would a bank or commercial banks now in particular undertake in a world with CBDC? You know, what would their responsibilities be? What do you foresee this being?
Yeah, obviously it depends indeed on the design and architecture of CBDC. The most radical way, which we more or less excluded, would have the biggest impact on the banking sector. In the hybrid structure I described, I imagine that banks will receive a fee from clients and or the central banks for doing the onboarding of the clients. But given that they do not have access to CBDC accounts to make business for their clients, or make business with this money, as it is the case in the traditional sector, they lose a part of their funding, and they have to collect their funding by other ways, and this could be a little bit more expensive than before. So this could be a negative impact on the banking sector if you have this approach, but this does not mean that it would be a bad way to do it. It only means that there is a change in the structure and in prices. And this is important to state, is they are still allowed and able to do their traditional business as well. So they can still collect deposits and they can still extend loans. This would not be hampered in any way by the issuance of CBDC. In this sense, I would not see any problem for commercial banks. And in the stable coin approach, I think this could be a rather interesting case. So if you issue a digital money which is backed by wholesale CBDC from the banks, because there you could theoretically issue a blockchain-based stablecoin, where you can include the features of smart contracts, programmability, and have a really listen to the clients what they need. If they have a special business model where corresponding blockchain based money is needed. And then what is also very interesting for banks is the point that you can make settlement of securities much more easier to do. Because in today's world, if you buy and sell securities, be it stocks or be it corporate bonds or government bonds, the settlement is done always 2 days after that you have bought the security or you have sold it. But if you have a blockchain-based money, then you can do the settlement of the security on the same blockchain, and then you can have really immediately payment of the money and receiving the security at the same moment. So you have instantaneous payment and receiving the security, and this would be certainly, well, it would be quicker, faster, more efficient, and it would be also safer, because you don't have to fear that in the meantime anything can happen with your security, for example, lose value. This is not any risk anymore.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yes, so you touched on a number of very important points there. Now that you're talking about settlement and the long lead times between settlements of various transactions. Is there a reason why you mentioned it was like 2 days? What's the primary reason there is a delay of say 2 days? Is it because of KYC? Because of AML purposes? Is it an infrastructure consequence? What causes this delay in settlement of securities, like you mentioned?
Well, the securities are deposited in custody. In German, it's the Girosammelverwahrung. It's a central custody. And if you transfer it from your account at this central custody or at the bank's account of this central custody to another bank's account in this central custody, this takes quite a lot of time. This takes these 2 days. I'm not sure why it is these 2 days, but it is a process that takes time, and it's a different system than the payment system. So you have two different systems which are running parallel, and you have to coordinate, and this makes it more complicated than in the blockchain system, where you would have both on the same system.
Yes, I think that's the benefit of the blockchain, a single ledger. Well, let me not say blockchain, but potentially distributed ledger technology. The settlement and the payment are essentially contained on a single ledger, reducing reconciliation costs and that type of thing. So that's interesting. Perhaps just as a final question and close, Cyrus, how, from your experience, how have the developments and discussions surrounding the digital euro and other forms of digital money, like you've mentioned, stable coins and e-money tokens potentially, how have these influenced the outlook and strategy of commercial banks and even your own organization's strategy, if you're allowed to mention that?
Well, I think that any bank should look quite closely at these developments of CBDC, but also of the whole crypto space, be it decentralized blockchain approaches or distributed ledger technology, what I think where for example there is quite a lot of activity is in the tokenization of real assets, especially real estate, this is, for example, an issue which could really change quite a lot in the capital markets, because you can you have as an investor have much more possibilities to invest in many different asset classes which were not available, especially for retail investors before. So if you really can now buy a share in a real estate asset or of a diamond or artwork, which before could only be bought by an oligarch from, well, let's say South Korea or so, then it makes it different. It makes also different for the financial sector, which is the traditional distributor of such securities and assets. And so therefore I think it's quite important to look at these developments and to find the role in this new world where decentralization is very much the name of the game. And now how you cope with it, if you really still want to have a share in profits also in this whole world. And this is quite a challenge, but one approach would obviously be to be in the advisory role, to advise people and investors how to use these tools which are there. And I think that this is certainly a way to go for it. And then another possibility is to, each bank has assets on the balance sheet. And it's possible also to tokenize a part of these assets and distribute it to other people so that you have free place on the balance sheet again to make new business. So you won't have in 10 years from now only the blockchain-based economy, but you will still have also the traditional sector and make also traditional commerce, but you can combine both business or both ways of doing mm-hmm. business.
Yeah, so essentially it's not an either or a binary metric. In this case, it will be a blend of new tech and new ways of doing things, and also still the traditional players such as commercial banks and that type of thing, just reimagining perhaps how they conduct business and shifting of roles, as you say, to a more advisory perspective. So very interesting. Mm-hmm. The financial system is being rewritten in real time, and I think at this point in history we have the unique opportunity to shape what the final draft might look like. So I think it's imperative that we take this opportunity to shape the future of finance through discussions such as these, and of course the Digital Euro Association is committed to arming society with the knowledge necessary to make informed decisions about the future of digital money and finance in general. And with that said, I think we're at the end of our episode today. Thank you so much, Cyrus, for joining us and sharing your valuable insights.
Thank you.
We look forward to what the exciting future of digital money holds. Do you have any final words, maybe for our listeners?
Final words. I'm looking very much forward to the development of CBDC and hope that Ms. Lagarde, who yesterday made a statement on CBDC and raised the hope that there may be some acceleration in implementing the digital euro. So this would be a nice thing to see.
Absolutely. And we're all anxiously waiting to see what how the digital euro will take shape, and hopefully we can all contribute towards its final form. Thank you so much, Cyrus, once again. We really appreciate your time. And thank you to everyone for listening in, and we'll catch you next time for another episode of the Digital Euro Podcast.